I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, and joining me this evening, we have Matthew Knight.
Hello.
And Joseph Branton.
Hello.
This Google Hangouts thing is not quite working out as planned, is it?
No.
Some small technical hitches. I promise that next week...
You'll actually spend 5 minutes thinking about it.
It's not that. It's that Matt's never around to set
true.
It up.
That is true.
Just a flying visit from him.
We should try Skype and FaceTime.
Yep, we can do that.
Maybe we can find some strange, like, obscure communication device. I like letting
Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook.
That's obscure, isn't it?
That very.
How is everyone? Technical difficulties aside, Matt Knight, how's things going?
Yeah, good. I've got to see Larry Carlton yesterday. That was good fun. He's an amazing player, and I got to see, although I didn't get to play it, I got to see his 68-335, the one that they've based his signature on. It's absolutely amazing.
Nice. Was he playing it at the event?
Yeah, so he was just playing that through... Just an overdrive, a delay, a wah pedal, and then into a Fender 65 reverb. And it was just like one of the best jazz sounds and some of the best blues sounds I think I've ever heard. And that 335 just looked absolutely amazing. And because he was only doing a clinic and his tech was still with him. So his tech was doing all the setups still.
Even though it's just an amp and a couple of pedals?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, his tech even like restrung it and like everything backstage and had everything warmed up and was like, oh no, I'm not happy with the sound of this, and moving the mics around. I thought it must be amazing to have like a full-time tech that basically follows you around all the time.
What sort of stuff is he doing? Was he with a band or was he just on his own backing tracks?
No, it was just him. And it was just a really good Q&A session. He played along to some tracks, but he was just answering a load of questions. Because, I mean, he's been a recording artist for over 50 years. He answered a lot of questions, and he answered a lot of questions very truthfully. Kind of like people were like, oh, you know, how can I be like a really successful session musician? He's like, you can't. He's like, there's not enough work. It's like, it's got to be the hardest thing that you could ever do, you know? And, people were like, oh, but you know, how much should I practice? And he was like, I don't know, I don't practice. it was odd, but at least he was like really, really honest about it.
Imagine getting to that point where you're just like, yeah, I'm successful, people just call me up and you like don't really have to work for it anymore, you know.
Albert Lee said much the same thing at another sort of recent event where he was talking about session musicianing and how that sort of market has really dried up. At the moment, it seems to be was it Albert Lee? Or no, it was Nathan East. Nathan East, yeah, that was it.
Similar thing. He was just saying that for, you know, someone who plays guitar, like a guitar session player, it's really difficult because, you know, people can just, you know, grab loops or, you know, do synthy stuff and kind of build up layers that way. And you kind of don't necessarily need a guitar in the mix anymore.
Yeah, he was saying that, you know, a lot of times now as a session guy, someone will just send you a WAV file that's a backing track, and you'll just load it into Pro Tools, sit in your studio for half an hour, write a, do a bit, send it back, and it's like, well, what are they paying you for? They're paying you for half an hour's work. You know, it's,
you're not going to earn the big money that way.
No. So it was really interesting, really. I mean, he was saying that that sort of time's passed, and that, you know, people are doing a lot more recording at home, and it's a whole different thing now. But yeah, it was really good. He talked about his signature 335 a little bit as well. I wanted him to talk about the amps that he uses, but he didn't really want to go into it. He's endorsed by a company called, I think they're called Blue Tone Amps. And they're like dumbbell clones, but they start at like $5,000, and each one is built to custom order. So like all the specs are changeable. They basically build each one to how you want it.
So completely affordable and available to everyone, right?
Yeah, yeah. In a shop near you soon.
Yes. Not one you're going to be seeing in your neighbourhood high street guitar shop.
No.
So what else did
he... But then he said the Fender came close.
Did he talk much about, like, how the industry's changed in terms of, like, gear or anything like that? Did he talk about maybe, like, his pedal board and...
No, I think he's one of those guys that's kind of like... I mean, he's always played a 335, and, I mean, he's even got a song called Room 335. So I think he's kind of really set in the gear that he... He played a Princeton for a while because that was the main thing you could get in, like, the early 70s. Then he played a Boogie for like 25 years because he was like, that's the best thing out there. And then he got hold of Dumble, and he'd used Dumble pretty much ever since. But then the Dumble kind of became too expensive to take on the road. But I think he's always been like, no, I had one amp and that was kind of it. I think he's sort of very much like, I'm just, that's my setup and that's my sound and that's what I want.
On the other end of the spectrum, from seeing one of the most famous session musicians in the world talk about his £5,000 amp, you went to a boot fair this weekend. Was there any sale?
A boot fair. That sounds really American.
Yeah, boot fair.
Boot sale.
Boot fair, isn't it? Go down the boot.
Yeah, it was. it was weird because I was like, oh, you never know what you might find, and like all I found was a couple of old keyboards. They weren't even Casio keyboards, so they weren't even like marginally good, so that was a shame. But I did see a woman sell clothes out of her Ferrari, so it was the ultimate boot sale. So like, yeah, I'm just gonna turn up to this boot sale in my Ferrari.
Have you ever found anything?
They don't even have a boot, that's where the engine is.
Have you ever found anything at boot fair?
I think I, guitar wise, no. Apart from, I think I found a Squire once. What was the other brand that Fender had? Sun?
Yeah, Sun. That was a brand.
The little Sun Strats. And I was like, oh, yeah, this looks like a Strat. And I picked it up, and it was just like, it had clearly been in a cupboard for like 20 years. And I was like, oh, it's not even worth 20 quid. But I think the problem is that eBay has sort of destroyed that for a lot of things, like, you know. If you find a guitar in a cupboard, it's easy to just go on eBay or go on Google and be like, what is this guitar? And, you know, so I think the chances of finding things like that are less and less.
I was hoping that you'd found some sort of treasure. Have you ever found anything at a booty?
No, certainly nothing ever guitar related. I tend to avoid those. I don't really like boot fairs. I don't like mixing with common people. But my girlfriend did, actually. She went to a car boot sale and found a Roland Juno 6 synthesizer.
Really?
Yeah. And
totally wow. Broken.
No. Completely working. They were selling it, saying for, I think, 30 quid, saying, you know, all the lights come on and everything, but no sound.
Because there's no speakers.
Because they thought it was an all-in-one
thing.
Emma kept very shtum, and
has she still got that?
30 quid. I think she donated it to a recording studio in Chichester that she uses.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Defo nicked.
Probably not, though. That sort of thing is like, you might find it if you didn't know what you were looking at and go, oh, it turns on, push the keys, oh, there's no sound coming out, it's useless.
Yeah.
It's absolutely.
No, actually, I did find a small...
You found a what?
So I was going to So I found a little Casio keyboard once at a car boot sale, and the woman had taped the speakers over with gaffer tape because she got fed up of her son hitting the same key.
Nice.
Over and over again. She was like, seriously, just take it, 50p, whatever. I was like, yeah, sure, I'll take it for 50p.
Don't ask me how I ended up at this point, but at the weekend, I was looking for Casio keyboard demo versions of Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go by Wham, because that was the one that was always on the Casio keyboards when we were kids. And it's pretty special. And you realise that when you listen to it now, it uses loads of the different sounds on the keyboard, and these are like really rubbish keyboards where you could only have one sound on at once. So the demo they shot off with, totally pointless. Couldn't do it. Impossible. Do check that out for a bit of 80s nostalgia. What else has been going on this week, Joe Branton?
Well, let's see. I think last week I spoke to you guys about the fact that I wanted to get a fretless bass. Did I speak to you about that last week?
I think you were toying with the idea.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, this week I got hold of ESP, well, Selectron, who distribute ESP in the UK. And they are flying me over because they didn't have any.
Where are they flying you to?
No, they're flying me over an ESP LTD vintage 204 fretless.
Is that Jazz 204?
It's a P bass with a jazz pickup as well. So
nice.
Sunburst, Torque Guard. It's completely unlined fretless bass with dot markers on every single fret. And yeah, that's pretty good. I'm pretty happy with that because there were none around. So they are flying me one over and sending me that one.
I don't think I've ever seen one of those. So.
Really cool. I got to try one out recently in a guitar shop, and I was shocked at how much better it was than the Squire Vintage Modified P bass, which is roughly the same price.
Okay.
And you get the extra jazz pickup in the ESP, in the LTD. It's just such a better instrument. The neck is much thicker and fuller and kind of squared off at the back, which is really useful for sort of fretless playing. It allows you to keep your form a little. Well, I tend to find it does. And, you know, because it's an unlined fretless, it just looks cooler.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about the... I mean, I would be utterly, utterly useless without the markers on there.
Oh, but you've got a dot on every fret.
No, but still confusing.
Not really.
Especially if you're thrashing it around.
Yeah, I mean, that is going to be my problem because I thrash around. But we'll find out.
Do any bass players, famous bass players who use fretless, do they use them for like more aggressive stuff?
I mean, you know, one of my biggest heroes, Juan Alderete de la Pia.
Yeah.
In fact,
he's added a new couple names, is it?
No, that's his fault. I mean, if you go back to the 80s, he was called John Alderete. and as when he joined the Mars Volta, he was suddenly Juan Alderete. And gradually, as their albums continued, he gained more names. And he's now Juan Alderete de la Pia. But, but yeah, he actually plays a PJ, a Sunburst PJ with a Torque Guard. And I think it's an ebony neck on his. His was unlined, but he had lines put on it because of how much he throws himself around. He just couldn't keep track.
I just can't imagine that if you're like thrashing it about and then just being like, oh, I must remember where I am roughly on the board.
Yeah, I don't know. You see it done with like loads of like rockabilly double bass players, you know.
That's true.
They manage to sort of, they throw themselves around a bit.
Yeah, I just think the double bass is a bit more scope for being like not quite in tune. Do you know what I mean?
I guess so.
I don't know. I think you can get away with it a
bit
more.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's not very expensive. It's not very expensive bass at all. So so hopefully it'll work, but I'm not too fussed if it doesn't.
I'm quite looking forward to watching videos of you completely confused about what you're playing.
I know it's going to be bad, but... there's a really good video that Juan Aldrich has a YouTube channel and a website called Pedals and Effects.
You're the Juan that I want.
Oh my god, I hate.
I am the Juan and only.
You can't just only use it as that word. You have to come up with others.
I don't know.
Is it something like wonderful?
Yeah, something good. Wonderful bass playing.
Yeah, anyway, so he runs pedalsandeffects.com, which is a great website which everyone should check out because he reviews loads of effects and stuff for guitars. It's not just a bass channel. In fact, it's pretty much half and half. He does a lot of stuff with I've forgotten the guy's name, the guitarist from Terra Melos.
Are you saying that it's neither one nor the other?
Oh my God.
Oh.
You're terrible. But yeah, he does lots of demos on there, and he does a great demo on why he talks about why fretless bass is better if you're going to be using loads and loads of effects, and he demonstrates like all those little semi-notes,
basically.
Well, all those little weird semi-notes that you get with like weird synth pedals and stuff that you just don't get on a fretted instrument.
Yeah, where they're not tracking correctly and they just kind of crap out a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about this week, Download Festival. How much of an eye had you been keeping on it?
Well, actually, considering that I was there last year, I didn't know until this morning that it was last weekend. I was in Sweden, so I didn't see any of it. So, unfortunately, I'm going to be absolutely useless.
Good,
Are you sort of segueing any information out of Download Festival? I mean, as usual, it was very good. I mean, I remember like last time I was there, there was and I was there with Total Guitar, interviewing a lot of the big bands there, and I was shocked at the sort of guitars that I was seeing at a festival like Download. I think we all spoke about it, but the fact that I was seeing loads of Gibson and loads of PRS, and
yep,
they were not brands that I expected to see being very predominant at a largely metal festival.
That seemed very much the same this year, actually. Just the only reason I really know that Download was on is from Marshall's Instagram. Marshall were just everywhere at Download.
Really?
It seems like they've really stepped up their game in terms of like...
One of the festivals they've managed to keep hold of then, because Orange is sort of bowling them out of the water, taking over all the festivals that they used to have backlines.
I saw that one of your team was at Golden Gods this week, and loads of Orange there. I think they're like the main sponsor.
They are the main sponsor. That's it. In fact, it was Orange that gave us the tickets, not Metal Hammer.
Right, yeah. Fine. Download, Marshall seemed to be really on top of it. There were like loads of photos from backstage. Slash was there, obviously, promoting a huge amount of Marshall stuff. It was really cool to see them kind of back in the frame, really, in terms of, you know, a major kind of festival appearance.
Well, they've got some cool, exciting stuff coming out this year, Marshall. I think we might see them sort of trying to step back into the limelight a little bit.
I saw another demo on the 800, JCM 800 reissue, and it sounded really good. I'm really into it. I'm glad they kind of brought that back. Matt, have you had a chance to spend much time with the 800?
No. I haven't seen that there's some new Marshall stuff coming out. Actually, the only new thing I've plugged in is the new Orange overdrive pedal. It's the only new thing I've plugged in this week.
That's wicked.
The Backspan guitar.
Yeah, possibly the worst snack ever for a guitar pedal.
I don't know. Later on that we're going to talk about today that might have a worse name than that. What were your impressions on the Backspan guitar?
Yeah, it's really good. Basically, it's great if you want the Orange sound but don't want an Orange amp.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the Crush Pro in a box, really.
Which is kind of my problem with it. I don't know who wouldn't want an Orange amp.
Yeah, but I mean, not everyone can afford everything. What if you've got like a Blues Junior or something?
It's a near £300 drive pedal.
Yeah, I know, but I mean...
It costs more than the Crush Pro.
That's true.
The idea is that you're supposed to have it afford to maybe have like a Valve Orange amp. You can use the cab sim out and then use it for, you know, going straight into your desk.
I hadn't thought about that. I'm looking for quite a decent little solution for sort of like desktop recording, and that might actually work. Like the cab sim on it sounds pretty good. That's kind of a good option.
Have you got a Tube Meister?
Yeah, I have.
Just go.
It would mean like lugging it into the other room, though. Like, I just want something that can sit on my desk in the bedroom so I can just do some recording and not have to lug an amp around the flat. I mean, I know it's like a 5-watt little combo, but still, it's all set up there. Now my pedal board...
I would have that. I like that drive pedal, but if I was going to have something like that, I'd use the Sansamp Classic GT. Just basically like the version of a Sansamp, really. But they sound so good. I've played a couple of gigs with them straight into a PA and they sound amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I just, you know, I've used those a fair few times in the past. I just fancy something a bit different. The Orange sounds like a good option. Anything else to discuss before we head into some news this week?
No, I'm good.
Matt Knight?
No.
Let's news it.
And it's been a big week for news, actually. Like, I started making the running order for the playlist this morning, and I was like, I don't think anything's happened this week. And actually, it turns out loads of stuff has happened. Firstly, today, TC Polytune clip.
Yeah, this is actually the biggest deal that shouldn't be a big deal and that I don't give a crap about that's ever happened. Like, well, apparently...
Last week they had that big marketing thing and we guessed on the podcast. We were like, oh, could be this, maybe a new pedal. Turns out it's a clip-on tuner.
But this is the most amount of money that TC have ever put into promoting a product.
Really?
This is their biggest promotion push of all time. Like,
it's been like 2 years in the making, isn't it?
I don't care. It's a clip-on tuner, but I do appreciate that it's a clip-on tuner for £35. But today was the first day that they were on sale, and lots of people were buying them.
I didn't know that they were £35. That is pretty incredible, really, because even like fairly crap clip-on tuners are £20. So if you can get, because it looks really good, it does all the stuff that the Polytune stuff will do, all the Polytune tuners will do. But obviously in a really nice LED headstock tuner.
Yeah.
£35, actually. I was expecting they were like £59 or something like that. £35 sounds really reasonable. Matt, did you get a chance to watch the video?
Not the video that they've released today?
Yeah, that one.
Was it today?
Yeah.
No, I haven't. I've seen a couple of pictures of it and I've seen some other reviews. And it looks really, really good. Like, I've always got a clip-on tuner handy. I use one of the little Korg pitch clips. Actually,
and how much are they?
One of these.
£10.
Tenner.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but they're not super accurate. Like, you could definitely have one of those on your guitar all the time, then not have a tuner on your pedal board.
What, for people that don't move around when they play live, a pitch clip's just going to fly off.
I don't know, I wouldn't know.
You haven't seen the clip on the TC one, though. It looks like a bulldog clip. It looks like super, like, it looks like there's loads of tension there, basically. So I wonder if they're kind of doing it with that in mind.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Yeah, I mean, look, it's probably really well designed. It's definitely going to work really well. Are you ever going to trust it as much as plugging in a tuner on the floor? Probably not. And I'm not sure it's more expensive than a clip-on tuner.
Yeah.
You can get a clip-on tuner that works for a tenner, and it's not that much less than a cheap floor pedal tuner. For me, it just puts it in an odd place. It's an odd thing to be raving about. I don't get it.
You haven't seen the video. The display is wonderful.
I was going to watch the video. I did start watching it. Unfortunately, my hands just started making a noose for myself and throwing it over the table. So I decided to stop watching.
I honestly think you should watch the video, because I think you might change your mind about the fact that it's a bit more money than like a pitch clip. It is way better than a pitch clip. It looks proper. And I kind of understand why they're getting behind it, is because there's definitely a gap in the market. It's like a jump between handheld tuners at like £10 and £20 and then a pedal tuner starting, I guess, at £59. £35 is definitely the right price point. I think they're going to do loads with this. I think it's a really intelligent product.
I have been proved wrong today. They are flying out.
Well, exactly. Yeah, that does not surprise me. Another big bit of news this week. This kind of came totally out of the blue. I just sort of came home and it popped up. Line 6 have announced the Helix multi-effects pedal.
Yeah.
What do you guys make of this? Matt and I, have you had a good chance to give it a look?
Well, the thing is, it's not a multi-effects unit. It is basically their take on the Axe FX, because it's amp modelling, it's everything that an Axe FX does, everything that a Kemper does minus the profiling in either a floor or a rack unit. The only thing I can't get my head around is the floor unit's going to be about £1,500. The rack unit's going to be the same price, but then you have to spend an extra £500 on the floor controller. So I don't know whether the rack unit will do something different that the floor unit doesn't do.
I think that a rack unit format is still surely more desirable, though.
It's going to be, surely it's going to be like balanced in and outs, like the things that they've always done on Pod Pro.
But have you seen the outputs on the foot controller? I can't think of anything else they can't put on the foot controller that they haven't already put on it.
What about things like digital output, MIDI?
It's all on the foot controller. It's all on the floor unit. Yeah. The amazing thing about it is it's all hands-free editing. So if you want to like, oh, I want to turn down the bass, you just hit bass control, and then you can use the expression pedal to move the controls up and down. So the idea is that you edit all your sounds hands-free.
And touch-sensitive buttons as well. Is that right? So you can like push the. I don't really know how that's going to work. Will you like push it down halfway or something, or you turn it? I don't understand. But
yeah, I don't know if the. I think we manage to get a chance to look at one and review one, we're never going to know fully. But some of the sounds sound really good. And what I think you can do on it that you can't do on things like the Axe FX is patch in your own effects as well. So there's like four effects loops. So in your own, you know, sounds that you're creating, you can still patch in your own effects.
Do we think this is part of the long game with the Yamaha buying Line 6? Do you think they kind of went, look, you guys are creating great sounds and you've done this for years, you know about the modelling side of things, but maybe the products have kind of fallen by the wayside a bit? Do you think Yamaha basically have gone, look, all our stuff is really functional, you know, on their, I'm thinking of their kind of synths and stuff. They haven't been very fashionable for the last few years, but they've always had loads of features. Yeah. Do you think they've bought Line 6 gone, look, let's make... We know how to design the product, but our stuff generally sounds a bit boring. Why don't you design the sounds, we'll design the product, and that's kind of what the Helix is. That's what it seems to me.
I think so, because I think, you know, and we've said it before on like previous podcasts, that Line 6, you know, especially like 8-10 years ago, their R&D department was like, how many times can we rehash a pod? Like, how many times can we put a pod in a different box and call it something else? And, you know, the Firehawk is really, really nice, but it's effectively the same thing as the amplifier, but it's just the effects and it's in a foot controller. So this is kind of like, I think they've been working on it for quite a while, but yeah, it seems like someone's gone, actually, you know what, we need to do something completely different here.
Interestingly, no mention of like app control or anything like that. Like none of the Line 6 editing, it's all on the unit.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Yeah, there's no like Bluetooth connections.
I think that makes it sound more professional, because I think as soon as you start getting apps involved and Bluetooth, it kind of, I don't know, it cheapens it in a way.
100%. I'm really, really glad that they've not gone for, oh, here's the Helix app. Or certainly not yet. You know, it might come down the pipe later on. But yeah, I think it looks like they've really, for the first time in a long time, really assessed the guitar market rather than the lifestyle product market, which I think is where they were going much more with Amplify. Now they've gone, okay, what's doing well in guitars? Axe FX, Kemper, you know, those kind of high-end digital processing, whether it's on the floor or whether it's on a rack, and that's what Helix is, it seems.
Yeah, I think the edge that they'll have certainly over things like Kemper and Axe FX is that I think they've got, Line 6 have got a really rich history of you know, distortions, modulations, delays, reverbs. And I think the actual effects in there will be much better than, say, some of the effects that are in the Kemper. I think, you know, they've got a lot of history that they can kind of build on. So I've got high hopes. I think it'll be a really, really good unit.
I think so too. I think it's good to see Line 6 going back to their roots a bit almost. Like I say, like steering away from the more lifestyle-y products and going to something that's very much guitar-focused. Matt Knight, tell me what you know about the AcPad.
Not a lot. Is that the one that was going around on the sort of viral video recently of the guy with the acoustic and he's like playing the drums and
yeah,
some
that's
dubstep
the one.
Beats?
It is exactly that.
It just another MIDI controller for a guitar that everyone will buy, and then everyone will go, oh, I don't sound anything like that video. And then it will go in the cupboard and get dusty.
It's one of those things, isn't it, that where the videos make things look so good because these people have obviously had loads of time to practice and they've kind of built the product for that job that they want to do and they show it off. But this one actually, what I like about the AcPad is that there's no like extra fitting required. It literally just kind of like sticks to the guitar body and then it's touch sensitive on the actual...
Yeah, I mean,
it's kind of fabric-y.
Yeah, it was weird because with all these sort of things, like I was talking to someone at Fender and I didn't realise that the Fishman triple play Strat has already been discontinued. And I think no matter what they do, I think it's just going to be another gimmick. And there are some people out there doing stuff with MIDI, but I think the thing is that these sort of products give no instant gratification whatsoever. So you kind of plug them in and there's so much setup involved that, you know, there's no sounds built into your computer or anything like that. You know, you've got to create all these. You've got to hook up to a soft synth. And I think there's just so much effort involved that people are like, actually, do you know what? I can't be bothered.
So what people really need is just play the guitar a bit more on that?
Yeah. I mean,
just buy more effects. That's what's so good about effects pedals is that they're instantly like, yeah, cool. I'll step on a distortion and my guitar sounds distorted.
The thing with these sort of MIDI adaption things for guitars is that guitar is an instrument that requires two hands to play. And so as soon as you introduce something that requires a third hand, it's never going to work as well as, you know, just having some really interesting pedals on the floor.
Yeah, I completely agree. And also just maybe just like play the guitar a bit more instead of having drums and beatbox sounds and stuff.
All right, granddad.
Yeah, I'm old, you know, I'm old. let's do one more bit of news this week because I know, Matt, that you're very, very excited about this week. You're very excited about this bit of news this week. Dodd have reintroduced the Gonculator and Meatbox pedals as their kind of ongoing reissue series. Now, I mentioned that there would be a silly name in this podcast. Tell us about the Gonculator.
The Gonculator is the old Dodd grunge distortion that they released in it was the early 90s, but they then built a ring modulator into it. Because I think wasn't there like a story, I think we talked about before, that they gave Kurt Cobain a grunge pedal.
One, yeah.
And then he threw it into the crowd. He was like, why do I want this?
Yeah.
But that was, you know, it must have been, I think it was the early 90s, all these sort of pedals came out. And I think the great thing about Dodd is they've kind of gone, oh yeah, all these pedals that we used to make are kind of going for loads of money. So maybe if we make some reissues, we might actually make some more money. And yeah, they're because the Meatbox, I think the Meatbox is going for about 200 to 250 quid on the second-hand market.
Yeah, that's crazy. The Meatbox is amazing. I've got a Meatbox.
Have you?
Copycat.
Oh, right, okay.
Made by Gahura.
That
Scottish pedal. But yeah, it's the most amazing fuzz.
Yeah, it's weird because it's, you know, there's pedals out there now that you can pay 200-300 quid for that have done some thing like, oh, this fuzz, and those sort of pedals have been around for ages. And yeah, the Gonculator, I nearly bought one a couple of weeks ago, and I know a friend of mine actually just bought an old one, and I was like, yes, I can't believe they've finally decided to reissue it because it's such an awesome sounding pedal. But all those sort of pedals kind of like faded into obscurity because I think they were just a bit too weird and wacky when pedals weren't really a popular thing in like the early 90s. And yeah, they've sort of all faded away, and it's only kind of a few people that have kind of like kept it alive, really.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to them. There's some demos up and stuff online already, and the Gonculator just sounds absolutely bonkers, or Bonculator, if you will. I just really like it. Like you say, I like the Dodder just doing weird and wonderful stuff again, because I think they realise, like, apart from the Overdrive preamp they do, the 250, the like yellow box one, they're not going to compete by just doing like drive pedals and stuff, are they? So why not do weird stuff that there's obviously a market for because of the eBay values?
And I think there'll be a really good price. I'd imagine they'll probably be like £100 or something like that. You know, I just think, what a cool pedal.
Do we know when they're coming out?
No.
Dodd themselves haven't actually, like, Dodd are quite rubbish with, like, putting out announcements and their website and stuff. So the reason that I know that they're out there is, like, some guys on the gear page mentioned it, and there's some video demos of, like, I assume they're early production samples or something like that, because they're not actually for sale in shops yet, by the sound of things.
No.
Yeah, I can't find anything out there. But, yeah, exciting stuff. Dodd seem to be kind of riding high on their kind of 90s nostalgia that's going on at the moment. It's all good. Chap, should we do some questions?
Why not?
Questions!
So, Moog says, putting my Strymon timeline in the effects loop of my Marshall TSL 112 JCM2000 produces a lot of noise, making it unusable. I've tried pushing in the switch thingy on the back, which is supposed to help for pedals, but it's just two stages of hiss. I have a feeling it's electrical interference, but that's pretty poop if so, as you're always going to have something. Mind you, it might not be as bad if I put the effects in front of the amp. So, noisy effects loop, Matt. Any ideas?
Yeah, I've actually spoke to a few people about this before, and I think some effects loops just kick out more power. I know that a friend of mine's got an old Soldano, and he can't run anything through the effects loop, basically. Even though it's there, like any delays or reverbs, they just distort. They're just too noisy, and they're just like they're too high gain. And that could well be it. I mean, you might be creating a ground loop if you're using, depending on what power supplies you're using. But I would certainly try it in the front end and see if that makes a difference. But I think with the timeline, isn't there some sort of dry analog dry through so you can for use in effects loops? I think there's a specific setting in the unit itself for effects loops, so I don't know whether that might help.
What's that doing? Is that blending in more of the original dry signal or something?
No, I think it's cutting all of the dry signal out, so you're basically, because it's going through the preamp and the pat to the power amp, I think it's just feeding that signal into the wet signal and then like mixing it back into the power amp. I can't quite remember because I'll need to have a look at the manual, but I'm almost certain in the global menu there's a setting for effects loops or something. I will look into it further and reply on the Facebook group, I think. Otherwise, I'll talk for ages about parallel effects loops.
You're more than entitled to do that, Matt. You can talk for as long as you want about parallel effects loops. Maybe not.
I think it might get incredibly boring.
Maybe that's a solo podcast that you should be doing. That's the first offshoot podcast that we do from this. If anyone wants to hear that, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. Just let us know that you want to hear Matt's pedal weekly or something ridiculous. Phil says, what is the equivalent Epiphone to a Squire Classic Vibe, and which is best value given current Epi discounts? So, Joe Branton, top...
Yes.
I guess we're talking about top of the Epiphone range.
Well, Epiphone aren't especially clear. Kind of, there's no... They don't name things as specifically, I guess, as Squire do with you know, vintage modified and classic vibe and things like that. They do, however, do loads of occasionally weird, really cool things that they sometimes mantle in the Pro series.
Yes.
So recently we had things like the ES-175,
mm-hmm.
Which you know was the gorgeous sort of Gibson ES-175 style body with Gibson pickups and I think Gibson hardware. I might be wrong.
Some sort of upgraded hardware.
certainly upgraded hardware and Gibson pickups, and in a lovely like satin natural finish. You could also get it in a sunburst, which, you know, looks great as well. Of course, you know, that's going to be a poly rather than a nitro, so it's obviously an Epiphone in the sunburst, but in the natural finish it looks absolutely brilliant, and you've got Gibson pickups on it as well. So things like that. Anything in the Pro series? There's loads of Pro series Les Pauls, aren't there, Matt Knight?
Yeah, I think that's like their big thing that they're focusing on now. And it seems to have overtaken some of, like, everything seems to be Pro something, because they're doing Pro 2 Sheratons. But yeah, it gives you just a little bit more flexibility. Coil taps, upgraded hardware. It seems, to be honest, it seems almost pointless just buying a normal Epiphone Les Paul standard.
Yeah, especially with the Epiphone sale that's going on at the moment, sort of UK-wide, is crazy. Sort of off the back of Les Paul's 100th birthday, it seems, there's been this massive reduction on Epiphones across the board, which is great. Certainly on the bass front, you've got access to things like the Pro Series Thunderbird, which is brilliant. They do in
I love it when Les Paul played one of those.
Yeah,
brilliant. He loved great. That. He was all over that.
The Alpine White Thunderbird was amazing.
Yeah.
And of course you got the Jack Cassidy as well, which is one of the only Epiphone instruments that hits like a professional standard. Like Paul McCartney's bass player plays an Epiphone Jack Cassidy.
Yep.
And you know, it must be one of the few. It is £600 sort of normal retail, so yeah, I mean, you know, and to be able to get one of those in the sale as well is brilliant. But yeah, it's sort of across the board at the moment.
It's not quite an equivilent to a classic vibe, is it? Really,
no,
it's
not
when
really.
You start getting up there. What do they? What else do they do for the sort of like £200 to £300 mark on the bass front? Because Thunderbirds are there, aren't they? They're like £200.
Yeah, that's right. You can get a basic Thunderbird, but I wouldn't, because it's a bolt-on, and I think it misses the point of what a Thunderbird needs to be to make that sort of body shape work. I mean, they still do the most affordable, coolest bass on the market. They do the EBO, so which not even Gibson really do at the moment, because the SG bass that Gibson do has to come with that Sidewinder pickup in the bridge, which is not what was on the original EBOs. And so if you want kind of a reissue of that classic Jack Bruce style bass, then actually for £150, Epiphone do a really good one with the EBO. So I mean, I think that's pretty sound. The EBO, EB3 are great. Epiphone also bought and own
Tobias,
thank you. Yep. Yeah, and renamed it, well, they just call them Tobies now, don't they?
Yeah, Epiphone Tobies. That's the series, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Which are incredible sort of build quality, ridiculously affordable, like £200, sub £200 bases. So they're always worth a shout. To be honest, Epiphone at the moment, with the amount of stuff they're doing across the board on guitars and basses, with a sale on everything, has just made them like the best thing. Everyone should get an Epiphone at the moment. If you've got like £200 to £300 and you're thinking of throwing it at something to play around with, there are so many cool and interesting things. Even like, look at how cheap Epiphone Wildcats are at the moment.
Oh yeah, stuff. You were talking about getting one, weren't you?
Yeah.
I am thinking about it. They're really affordable and really cool and really different. It's a really good time to buy one of the weirder things in the Epiphone catalogue for not much money.
How much is a casino these days?
A swingster.
Oh, how much is a swingster? Have they come down loads?
Look, I think the only thing that's really in the deal at the moment is the 2015 Les Paul range. But swingsters are still like £500, and considering that the hollow bodied Gretches are about £770, I think they're like an amazing guitar for the money. But with the casino, they've just bought out I think they've been out for a while, but the 339 size one. It's just like such a cool guitar for the money, £350.
I don't get on with those smaller ones. I want like a proper casino, and they're not that much more money. Are they like 399 or something?
The full size, 449, right, so pretty much. But they do a gold top one now, which looks awesome.
Do they? Gold top casino?
What?
Yeah.
That sounds
alright.
Gold
Top Casino. It's a limited edition model.
With cream pickup covers?
No, it's still the chrome.
Wow.
Chrome hardware, chrome pickup covers.
Gold Top Casino. I'm kind of into that.
Oh yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah. Anyway, we got really far off track. So, what would you go for? Squire Classic Vibe or Epiphone at the moment?
Did you say it was just the Les Pauls, Matt, in the sale at the moment?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, I think it's on anything.
No, I think it's just on the Les Pauls, from what I've seen.
Oh, rubbish.
Since Les Paul did play.
A Les Paul.
Les Paul.
Yeah, but I thought it was something more than a Les Paul sale now. Anyway, I think considering the prices and just considering I've completely exhausted the vintage modified and classic Vibe range.
Go for a Les Paul.
I'm kind of waiting for them to release something else at the moment. But yeah, I mean, if the Joe Bonamassa Les Paul was in the sale, I'd definitely pick one of those up. They were amazing. Go for one of the weirder ones, you know.
Yeah. Matt, what are you saying at the moment? Epiphone Les Paul or Classic Vibe?
No, I'd still have to go for a Classic Vibe. I did plug the Vibe Simon Neils again the other day, and I was like, that guitar is just so cool.
It is so good. Such, a Fiesta just, Red maple necked.
No, it's Rosewood.
Oh, is it a Rosewood neck?
Yeah, Rosewood board. Yeah. Yeah, they're really, really nice.
I still think in the Classic Vibe, I'd have to go for the Stratocaster that they do with a matching headstock in Burgundy Mist.
Yeah, very nice. 60s classic Vibe Strat. Yeah. Let's do a couple more questions. Okay, Carl Henrik says, which clean amp do you consider as the most pedal-friendly amp under £1,000? What's a good amp to use with pedals, Matt? You're the man to know.
I still think for under a grand, probably a Hot Rod Deluxe. Although they have got like probably the most amount of clean headroom for like a standard amp on the market.
I'd have to disagree, mainly because I recently saw an under £1,000 amp on the Gear Exchange on Facebook, which is great for clean. I think it was a Morgan.
Oh, I see.
Oh yeah, mine. Yeah. Actually, it's funny you say that, because the reason that I sold that is that it because I mainly play at home, I don't really gig, because it's 12 watts, there isn't enough clean headroom in it. So it sounds great at lower volumes, but when I've had the chance to crank out more recently, it just drives soon. Because I love the sound of Princeton, but actually, it just sounds great if you're just plugging like a Strat in and then that's it. And I think the thing is, if you can use a lot of pedals, especially drive pedals or delay pedals, you just need like tons of clean headroom. But yeah, I mean, sometimes Orange, but the thing is, I think whenever
Never
you're using
Orange.
A lot of delay, for example, well, I mean, the thing is that Rock Verb 50, it's got tons of clean headroom, but as soon as you want to use the drive channel, you can't use any of the delays because everything just sounds a bit too mushy.
I mean, I'm going to go with Hot Rod Deluxe as well. I just think it's the classic gigging amp, really. It's 40 watts, clean, channel sounds great. I think the drive channel is pretty... It's not great. I was going to say pretty poor, but it's not pretty poor. It's just not as good as it could be. But if you're using a ton of pedals in the front end, including drive pedals, then just don't use the drive channel on the amp. Just use your pedals to create the sound you want using the brilliant clean sound that's in there.
Actually, if you want an amazing gigging amp on the same run, because I finally had a chance to plug in the Michael Landau, just buy one of them. It's amazing. If you want like a clean amp and you're going to run pedals into it, that is definitely the best thing on the market.
They've tweaked the drive channel, haven't they? So it's a Hot Rod Deluxe with a tweaked drive channel.
No, there is no drive channel. That's the thing. It's two clean channels,
right.
So two clean volumes, one with a foot switchable boost, and then just bass, middle, treble, and that's it.
Oh, as far as I'm aware, they've tweaked the tuning, haven't they? Like it sounds different to a normal Hot Rod Deluxe.
Yeah, it sounds like harmonically a bit sweeter, and it's a little bit more bass heavy. It's 60 watts, there's tons of volume. But he uses quite a lot of pedals, and he uses some odd drive pedals and fuzz pedals. So, and I think they're like $899, so it'd be a really good amp if you're just going to run pedals and you just want something really, really clean.
Yeah, yeah. Let's do one more question, and let's keep the answers fairly short. James says, your child tells you they want to learn guitar. What guitar would you buy for their first, and which amp? Matt Knight, combination of guitar and amp for a beginner.
We don't have any price limitation.
Well, it's a starter pricing, so let's say...
Shop Strat.
Yeah.
And...
A Morgan,
yeah.
Let's say £200-ish pounds.
For both?
Yeah.
That's tricky.
Oh, let's say £300-ish pounds.
Yeah, that's probably... I would say Squire Affinity Tele, because Teles are awesome, and a Blackstar ID Core 10. Definitely the best combo you can get at the moment.
Joe Branton, any thoughts?
If it's a child in question, I might even consider spending the very reasonable sort of 250 odd quid on one of the short scale Fender Stratocasters that I bang on about so much. Because I think they're really, really, really cool guitars. And for the price point, they are unbelievable. If I was a kid and I was given a black Strat with a torque guard and strung up with heavy gauge strings with one of those, what's the name of the brand of the pickup?
D'Armond.
Yeah, with a D'Armond pickup in the bridge, I'd be pretty over the moon.
They're very, very nice indeed.
So I'd probably go for one of those. And, I mean, I don't know. First, the practice amps are all much of a muchness, really. I guess Blackstar offer a little bit more than most other people at the moment. I have a much more of a soft spot for Orange, however, and I think as a kid, looks at everything, and Blackstar just look boring, so I'd probably go for one of the little crush prick. One of the Orange crush picks.
Matt, I wish this podcast was video, because Matt Knight has just absolutely collapsed. With that, gents, I think let's call it an evening. It's been a very, very difficult ride to get this podcast done this evening. Thanks so much to our Patreon backers.
I need to read them out.
It was going to be a funny voice, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. A different one for each person.
People wanted some music in the background, but as this is very late when we're recording this, and I'm not going to have time to find any, I'll just do some now. What if I just do it?
Are you ready? Phil Thompson.
Flop, flop, flop.
Colin Anderson.
Moon Gravit.
Matt Quine.
If you want your name read out in such fashion, do join us at patreon.com/guitar nerds, where you're guaranteed an extra half an hour of podcast every week. And if you join our top tier, you get your name read out in that amazing way every week on the regular podcast. And just to say, those are just the what I've labelled here as June Patreon backers, but they were everyone who'd paid up by the 1st of June. And I know some people have paid up since then. You'll be included when it ticks over into the next month, so our podcasts in July, you'll be on there. Thanks everyone for supporting us through Patreon. It's helping us do this. Hopefully it will pay for a better internet connection, so we don't have as many problems hearing Matt every week. But we're gonna get that sorted out by next week. Thanks for being with us this week. It's been a bit of a tumultuous episode. If you want to submit questions to the podcast or simply chat to other podcast listeners, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. You can join us on Twitter @guitar nerds. You can join us on YouTube, youtube.com/guitar nerds videos, where we've got a new one going up this week. I think top 10 Stratocaster facts you never knew. The one at number one is absolutely amazing. You can all join us individually. You can get me @mark_random. You can get Matt @matt_nightsy. You can get Joe @joseph_900. And our regular Patreon contributor, our regular podcast contributor, Jay Cross, @jbay. Jbay. Jbay.
@jaybn1.
Thanks so much for listening. I promise next week will be better, and this week's Patreon episode will be way better because we've got some brilliant questions. So join us on there, and we'll see you next week. Thanks very much.
Farewell.
Cheers. Bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.